This is part one of a two-part podcast.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.
Okay, it's on. It's counting.
Hey.
I can see the numbers. All right. So yesterday we started the Kickstarter. Yeah. It is not doing well. And I'm kind of like, whoa, but this is profound stuff. And so, anyway, all right, fair. It is what it is. And I don't know what the reasons are that it's not doing well. I know lots of friends are giving me feedback like, oh, no, this is off to a slow start, but that's okay. It'll catch up later. And I'm thinking like, no, that's not how these things work.
It's profound stuff. It's not for everybody.
So, first I want to say, I've been chasing my health stuff for over 2 years now. So, it was over 2 years ago that I was told I have cancer. And, you know, there's a little bit of a setback. Like it's going to take me a couple of weeks to come to terms with, surprise!
Hmm.
So, and I also kind of feel like while I'm surrounded by people all the time, I do feel like it was a drag to address this stuff, not entirely alone. Saying I'm doing it alone is unkind to all. Like, when I was in the hospital, you came and got me out.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. So, but I mean, like, you had to drive. I mean, you live 5.5 hours away. You know, it's quite a drive. Thank you for doing it.
And
Bo came.
He was there with you.
He flew into Missoula, rented a car, and, And they wouldn't let me out of the hospital unless there was somebody driving me. But, okay, setting all that aside. But the thing I want to say is that it's like, before finding out that I had cancer, I put in overly long days, you might say, on everything.
Everything.
And it's like, and it was, there's so much to be done. And now you got a front row seat to some of the comedies where it's like, here's what I'm going to do. And I was making fun of somebody at the staff meeting this morning for suggesting this. And so it goes like this. Oh, you should just hire somebody to do that. So you've gotten to see me hire people and pay them. And then some people stick it out and they lean in and they do it. And they're there for 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are there for you 1 hour a week, but they'll bill you for 40.
Yeah.
And some people need 8 hours a week of hand-holding to do 20 minutes worth of work.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're thinking like, it's going to be worth it because they're going to ramp up. But they don't ramp up.
What you do is different and special, and not everybody can do it.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, it is a lot of weirditude to get used to. So I think the thing that somebody was saying today is we needed to hire a marketing expert. And I said, if you have an extra $100,000, $200,000 for a good marketing expert, then I'm glad to burn your money to do that. But my experience is that I've seen hundreds of marketing experts come and go.
Yeah.
And so what I've done is, because I keep getting a marketing expert come and tell me I'm doing everything wrong and I need to do it the right way. So 8 years ago, we got so overwhelmed with marketing experts that what we did was is we switched all my stuff over to having a 50% affiliate fee, and then we say, then you do the thing that you say is going to make $10 million, and then I'll split it with you 50-50.
Yeah, which is a great
deal.
It's
all set up and ready to go.
Yeah.
And I'd say ever since we started saying that, 150 marketing people have told me that, you know, I'm doing it wrong, and I tell them about this thing. Zero of them have attempted it. And
really?
I don't know. Maybe they've got these jobs that pay $10 million a year, and so why bother with my with merely half of a $10 million idea? I don't know. All right. I'm going off onto tangent. The key is to say, I put in overly long hours before. Then I found out about the cancer. And then let's just say it set me back a few weeks just to be like, but I immediately started trying to read books.
Yes.
And then I found one I really, really liked. And so I did that. And it's like, it requires me to eat in a way that's different. And I've got my own bucket of crazy to navigate when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suddenly I'm having to spend a fair slice of each day doing the physical activity required. You know, like you have to do these kinds of exercises and physical therapy and stuff like that. And then, because if you're going to do food as medicine.
Right. It's the Metabolic Approach to Cancer book that we all read. Is that not it?
And so the next thing is I have to prepare, rather than spending just a couple of minutes a day, like I just need some food real quick. And I'll eat that, and then I got to get back to what I'm doing. Instead of that, it's like, okay, stop everything. You are going to be offline for the next hour and a half. 1 hour of meal prep, and then on top of that, you have to eat the whole fucking thing. it's a big thing. You've seen this. You've seen what I eat. Yeah,
yes,
it is huge.
Magnificent salad.
And so it's like, eat the whole thing. Eat it! Eat it all! Don't forget, I had to... So between you and Kat and Rebecca and some others, I was taught how to make salad dressing. Because, of course, salad dressing you can buy causes cancer.
Yeah, you got to make your own.
You have to make.
Yeah.
Because it's like it has to be organic.
Uh-huh.
And it has to be made with this kind of oil. It has to be like either avocado oil or olive oil.
The highest quality oils.
And it's like the stuff that you buy, if it's organic, it doesn't have the good oil. And if it's not organic, it might have the good oil. It probably doesn't. So suddenly it's like you have to make your own.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you got great at that.
So, well, I did. I got better. It took time. But the point I'm trying to make is, and then this is going to be probably something I should never share. But it was a downer to have cancer and then be like freaking the fuck out. Like, am I going to die today? You know, and then, of course, to defy the doctors.
Yeah, that's a scary thing.
That, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like... And the story goes on and on and on and on and on, but I did feel, I did feel quite alone, even though I wasn't really. I mean, there are other people facing this, and they are more alone.
Yeah, we each face it on our own, though. No matter how many people are around you supporting you, it's you. Your journey.
Well, there's a lot of that. I just kind of feel like there were also a lot of people who helped, you know, along the way.
We as much as we can, and you had to fight it.
And there were a lot of days when I was very much all by myself. And at the same time, let's just say there were moments of darkness.
Yeah.
The bottom line is I wasn't getting as much stuff done, and I was trying to do my best to keep up, but I knew that every day I was falling behind. There was this, like... Yeah, everything is just, I'm just getting behind her and behind her and behind her and everything. And I kind of feel like everything, fortunately, there were a lot of good people. Like, oh, I got to thank Raven at the top of the list because she just took care of the forums,
yes.
You know, and so I mean, she was going through her own health comedies, and yet, you know, she was on it. And there were a lot of other people out at Permies and the staff. There's like 40 people at the staff, and they kind of kept everything going.
That's so awesome.
Made it easier. I mean, there were still problems I needed to deal with, but uh-huh. but it's like for the most part, there's that. And then Stephen was really great here. The great thing is that when it came to his needs as the high commander of the boot camp, he minimized the amount I needed to worry about, you know, especially during these. But I do believe that my absence affected the empire. So I wasn't gone, but I don't know, I probably only put in 70% of the time that I used to put in. And part of it is all the things to do to address it.
Yes.
And then I think on the back end, there were some hours carved away for like, this sucks, I hate it. And so basically, so here we are today. You know, the Kickstarter hasn't even been up for 24 hours, but it's not doing well. And it's like, I think it's really entirely because of my absence.
Yes.
And so I'm thinking like, oh, you know, all those the thousands of little details I didn't attend to, and that now affects the Kickstarter.
Right.
But everything's been affected. I mean, everything's kind of like losing its momentum.
Wow, yeah.
And it's like I'm trying to make up for it, and it's like Liv is being great at being a part-time assistant, and she gets it now with the whole thing of like, all right, every once in a while we gotta put together a deal and put that out there and keep the cash flow happening so that way, you know, because we need the cash flow for things.
Yeah.
Which is another thing, too, is we have a new server running now.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, that was really great.
So exciting.
We did a server fundraiser, and it got funded so fast.
That went really well. That was so good.
And then it's like, yay, we're funded. And then I get contacted by my host who said, oh, I forgot you have to put the shipping costs and these other costs in there.
No.
Sorry, I should have mentioned that to you before. So then it's like now I had to go back out to everybody like, okay, apparently there's these other costs. So yeah, we got that barely covered. People were like a little bit like not okay with that. But the new server can handle probably about 30 times the load.
That's wonderful.
And so, and everything's been very snappy, fast, and stuff since then. So, and Devika has made he's got us moved over. He had to upgrade a whole bunch of stuff to get onto the new server.
It seemed like he did a ton of work.
It was about a month, maybe more, of stuff. So, so, you know, as much as I'm being a whiny bitch, there are a lot of people who've, you know, helped and kept things going and stuff like that. So, you know, I rather than being, you know, it should be more like, you know, hooray for the people who are making the empire really, really work. I know that, like, you and Bo and Andreas have been pushing me to record a lot more podcasts. And there's, like, some really brutally important topics to touch into.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like I think over the last... I don't know, the last 6 months, there's been ideas for probably 60 to 80 new podcasts to make. But it's like something's got to give.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's just so much happening all at once that we're trying to juggle. And so, and part of me is like, we got to get this new Kickstarter out and started.
Yeah,
and so
it's running.
Kind of like got to the point where it's like, okay, everything else is just going to have to wait until the Kickstarter gets going.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the Kickstarter is going and it's kind of like, okay, well, once the, and before the Kickstarter was going, it's like, well, okay, so if this Kickstarter brings in this much money, then we're going to find, I mean, first of all, I got to replenish a lot of my savings because I've been burning through savings like crazy.
Mm.
And so, mostly to try out new assistants.
Wow.
That's been the biggest burn of all.
Wow.
And so, but the other thing is that with the new server, we went from putting everything on one server to now everything's on the old server and the new server. But my overall server bill has more than doubled.
Oh.
My monthly server bill. And it's kind of like, and that's hard.
Yes.
And so, and it's like, I got to keep everything moving. And then I don't know. While we watch all these other websites fold because of one reason or another, and we hear all the stories of all the, and it's like, oh, we are so lucky that we're still up. But of course, we're up because I'm paying for it.
Right.
And I'm trying to find a way to pay for it, but then people are, of course, pissy. And I gave Julia shit this morning because with every Kickstarter, she says, everybody will support your Kickstarter because they simply support whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell her every time she says that, it's like about 5% of the people supporting the Kickstarter will support it for that reason. But the rest of them are kind of like, I don't know. Is it good? I mean, I'm not sure if I want it. Yeah, it's like, sure, you got a lot of stuff there. But even with all the stuff, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think I'll let it go. I'll go, buy dinner tonight and that amount of money will be the tip, or half the tip for my meal tonight.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we're offering a lot at the $1 level.
You're offering a lot at the $10 level, offering the download at the $20 level.
So I saw a snotty comment today. It was like, what, this Wheaton fucker thinks that he's reinvented a composting toilet? And it's like, no, this is a non-composting thing we call a willow feeder, and there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, composting toilets are outlawed, and I can see the argument on why they're outlawed, and it has, the designs of the composting toilets are solid.
Mm-hmm.
The implementations are wobbly. And so when people in certain places where they are outlawed and people can't put them in, they're being punished for the actions of the people who did poor implementations.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I'm trying to come up with something that is harder. Like if you're going to be lazy, it's like, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
We'll roll with lazy.
You have a hard time messing this up. The system will work.
It'll work.
If you do a bad job.
If you do a bad job, that's fine. That's perfectly fine.
I think you did a great job designing it so that it will tolerate misuse or poor use or forgetfulness.
Or it could even go so far as, like, I like to think that someday someone will say, I'll buy your cans of willow candy off of you.
Oh, yeah.
And so
could be a profit-generating system.
It could be. I mean, with peak phosphorus around the corner, it's like, oh, you've got one of those Willow candy cans. Oh, that's going to be full of phosphorus, isn't it? And it's like, oh, that's got some worth now. Yeah. That's got some value.
Exactly. It's not a waste anymore.
Exactly. Which is another thing, too, is like, as we try to talk about these things, people keep using the word waste, and it's like, no. No, it's called willow candy. We're making candy, so the willow, because the willow tree is standing over there and wants to go om nom 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 nom, and it's like, that's not waste. That's Purina Willow Chow.
Yeah, this is only it's only waste if you're misusing that resource. That's what makes it a waste.
So, I mean, you and I were just talking moments ago about Dawn. Dish soap,
yeah.
And I think it came up during the staff meeting earlier because something about ducks. So
there's always the commercial for oil spills where they wash off the birds with the Dawn dish soap. I don't know if it's better, but it's what is in the commercial.
Well, so it's been my experience, like with environmentalists that use herbicides.
Uh-huh.
Like, I use this herbicide in the name of being an environmentalist. And it's kind of like the problem is that this environmentalist is like, okay, if you're given a quarter of an acre and you have 7 weeds that you want to go away, then what are you going to do? You're going to
cut them down, mulch them, disturb the soil, make it plant something else, outcompete them, graze animals on them.
Okay. That environmentalist is going to be able to solve that without herbicides, easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take that same environmentalist and set them down on top of 20,000 acres and say, use your environmentalist abilities to solve this problem we're having here. And so, first of all, the problem is the solution.
Yeah, what is...
But the environmentalist is like, okay, there's... As an environmentalist, the only way I could tackle this problem is with
the
herbicides. And I want to help that environmentalist understand better ways. I want to have a visit.
Yeah,
I want to talk
to
them. However, at the same time, they don't want to talk to me. And so so many people, human nature, if they can't figure it out in 11 seconds, they don't want to consider it. And so they figured it out on their own. Well, herbicides.
The long-term damage.
But now let's talk about Dawn dish soap.
Okay.
So to the credit of Dawn dish soap, that if I go out there with a gallon of the Oasis brand stuff.
Uh-huh. The soap that you like to use.
Then it could easily be replaced with something one-tenth the size called Dawn Ultra.
Okay.
And the Dawn Ultra might even still do a better job. So there's just less of it.
Okay.
But at the same time, without doing a deep analysis of what all's in it, I would say that if I took my Oasis Gray Water Safe detergent, gallon of it, and I poured that into a river, I think that that's going to be 1,000 times better for the fish in the river than that one-tenth size Ultra Dawn.
Yeah, probably.
And I haven't even done the research. And so just speculating, just guessing. But I think that the people that are trying to save those birds, they're like, you know, they are replacing one environmental disaster with another environmental disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't done the research and they don't know, and they just need something that they can solve in 11 seconds.
And maybe the Dawn is happy to pay for it.
And there could be a bit of that. I also imagine that the Dawn, Ultra Dawn or Dawn, that's at the grocery store is going to cost a quarter of what my gallon of Oasis is going to cost.
Right.
So your dollar per cleanup is better.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then is it causing an environmental disaster if you don't do the study to say that it is. And so I would say that there is a disaster happening there. Mm-hmm. It is pretty, it is really, you're trading one poison for another. In fact, I kind of wonder if the oil might even be less toxic than the Dawn Ultra.
Maybe.
And, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, millions of years old rotten gick, you know, like dead plants and animals. But, okay, moving on.
Have you ever wondered whether a particular book was really good or just so-so, and if you could trust the reviews online? When it comes to books related to permaculture, Permies has a large list of reviews for over 100 books. Perhaps you're considering a book for yourself or a friend, or you're just curious about what's out there. Stop by permies.com/book and take a look at the book review grid and read some honest reviews, and hopefully you'll find the next book to add to your collection.
The key is is that I'm trying to make this complicated thing to say something about, like, yes, I haven't been around as much. A lot of people tried to cover for me, but clearly if I am not there, then everything shrinks dramatically. And so I want to say I'm sorry, but I'm not. In fact, for those of you that are in the that paid the $25 and are in the Tommy Forum, I think I'm on the last month or two of the series of comedies.
Excellent.
And so you know, and we'll find out soon, I think, but. But then I keep getting people who are like, they want to know exactly what I did, exactly what I ate, and the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like, I feel like I'm never going to answer that question again outside of that Tommy
Forum.
It's
in the forum. You did a great job.
It's in the Tommy Forum, and I was very thorough.
You documented your progress and your story and very well.
But whenever I try to do it one-on-one with somebody, because they want to know. They need to know. And they're, like, getting pissed off that I won't tell them.
I think it's too deep of a question to answer.
Well, there's so much that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, like, the first step is, like, how can this be happening to me? I live a very organic life.
Right.
And then it's, and now in hindsight, I'm glad to say, okay, I was, because I was living on my own and feeding myself like an adult, then, and I'm not a good cook, then what I was doing was I was eating at restaurants.
Yeah.
And we have one restaurant that's relatively close that, I'm going to blame for at least half of this.
It's not organic.
It is the furthest from organic, but it was like, it's just, when you live rurally, it's like some restaurants are, you know, 20 minutes closer than others.
Right.
And so it's like, okay. Anyway.
And going out to eat is something that we love to do together as a group, and it's easy when it's right down the road.
And then there's a bit of that, but while everything here at the house that I was eating was organic, and I was eating a lot from the garden and stuff when this and that was on, and things of that nature, I was still eating at restaurants a good two or more times per week. And then whenever there's anybody around to visit, then it's like, oh, let's all go to Missoula and eat at the favorite restaurants. There's so many great restaurants in Missoula. Missoula is the best.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place to eat.
And it's like, let's go to the Saturday market. Oh, the Saturday market is so amazing there. And then you go there and it's like, look at the food over there. Let's go get some of that. And so it's like, and it's not organic.
No, but it's good.
No. That's true.
Seems like there was a cumulative effect.
So, but whenever, oh man, it's like I avoid talking about cancer to people because Not only is the story long, but and it's got all of these twists and turns, and but it's like people don't want to hear the story. Can the story, if the story doesn't fit in, again, 11 seconds.
It won't.
Then they need to interrupt me and tell me what I should do. And it's like, you know, if you shut your fucking pie hole for a minute, I'll tell you I don't have cancer anymore. But you couldn't wait, could you? You had to interrupt. You ought to do the so-and-so cancer. And it's like there's like 40 different recipes.
Yeah.
To do food as medicine, and they all work.
So many paths.
And some work better for some than others. And it's like, but, you know, what an exhausting thing. So it's kind of like if somebody, I don't say anything. I don't want to get into it because that's, and then of course, then there's the whole thing of like, don't tell other people because they'll give them false hope. What the fuck does that mean? False hope? This is not false. what the fuck are you saying? And so, okay. The next thing is I am learning that I am, and it's as defined by the Wheaton Eco Scale, I am crazy. And so permaculture enthusiasts find my stuff to be fucking crazy. And it's like, it's too much. The things I advocate for are just too fucking crazy. Just too much. Now, granted, this is a whole other podcast in itself, but I'm going to do an overview, which will just piss people off. But that's part of being crazy, I guess. And it goes like this. Remember Caroline? She was here a little while ago? Yeah. Lovely gal.
Uh-huh.
And always happy and smiley and giggly. All right. And so we sit at the table here and the boot camp, and then we can talk about stuff. And so Caroline says, she says, is the kind of gardening that you want us to do, is it like Mark Shepherd's stuff? And so I started off with the story of the Broken Limbs movie.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So the first half of the movie, so basically, I mean, Mark Shepherd, he has 110 acres packed with food, and he's growing like, I don't know, at least a dozen different crops, probably closer to 30.
Mm-hmm.
And there's hogs in there, and he's got hazelnuts galore and everything. And his book, Restoration Agriculture, is just amazing. But I'm looking up there like, where is it? It's up there on the shelf right there.
I just noticed. I've seen it on your shelf, yeah.
But maybe I'm looking at it so recently it's not up there right now. I don't see it. Okay. But I said, Mark is doing the commodity markets.
Uh-huh.
And so he puts together a whole bunch of food, like a truckload.
Yeah.
And then takes it to Commodity Markets Group, which he is a partial owner of now.
Mm.
I think I remember reading about that.
That's
and and it's like I think it, I'm not sure, but I think it's Organic Valley. Like when you buy something at the store,
really?
And it's Organic Valley. He's like,
oh,
that's
cool.
Part Mark Shepherd.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so there's a whole bunch of farmers, I think like 60,
neat,
that all contribute to that. And so it's, you know, anyway, they've got their own set of standards too.
Yeah.
So, all right. And I said, okay, let's look at that Broken Limbs movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it starts off and it's like, oh, all these orchards are going bankrupt. And it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and he says, my dad has an orchard, and every year he takes out a big loan in the spring to get him through until harvest in the fall. And you don't know how much money you're going to get per pound until you get there for the commodity marketplace. And it's like they tell you, like, okay, this year we're going to pay you 21.2 cents per pound or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so... And it's, of course, it goes down every year, you know, and it's like, so hence, you know, the farms, the orchards that are going bankrupt.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, no, no. So then they go and they're like, well, you know, so halfway through the movie now, or about 20 minutes into this hour-long movie at this point, like, we're watching all these orchards going, and they're, like, doing all this stuff to try to keep up with the markets and, you know, work the markets and do the market thing and study the markets and be responsive and try to build your crop up and try to, you know, plant more trees and improve the harvest, you know, and blah, 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 blah. So we're doing all, we've got to, you know, try to see if we can do 7% better than last year because, you know, damn, we got to get out of this hole so we're not perpetually in debt to the bank.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, it just sounds so brutal and so hard, and they're suffering. Okay. So then we go, and it's like, here's the commodity market guy. And he's like, well, we're doing our best, but basically China's putting these apples on the boat for 3 cents a pound.
Yeah.
And we're paying our guys 21 cents a pound. And it's like, and we're trying to compete. And now, of course, it's like, well, what about having the Whole Foods or the Safeways or the whatever? Why don't they just buy the apples direct from, you know, skip the commodity market guy? And it's like, oh, yeah, those grocery stores and stuff, they are sick to death of talking to crazy fucking farmers. And it's like... it's like, why is it late this time? And they're just like, I'm just tired of talking to these motherfuckers. And you give them directions and they just can't seem to get it right. So then you get all this time put into talking to these crazy people. And it's like they're just fucking sick of it. Yeah. So then it's like, I'm just going to talk to the commodity market guy. Because we have one conversation with him, and we'll get 47 deliveries.
Yeah.
It's like less drama, lower prices. Yeah. And it's like, oh. So, all right. Commodity market guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the commodity is like, we got to compete with China. And they're putting them on these boats, and they're getting them over here for so cheap. And it's like, that's who we're competing with, and we're just struggling to compete with those guys. So... so that's the commodity market guys. So then the Broken Limbs movie changes gears, and there was at like minute 30, you meet this couple, and they're like, okay, we're in debt to the bank, and and it's the same story, and you're like, oh, I know how this is going to end because I just watched the first half of this movie, and I'm stealing myself. And then they're like, oh no, hail. Oh, hell, hail. And so they had a bunch of crop damaged by the hail. And they're like, oh, we are so fucked. Because even if we didn't have hail, it was going to be tight.
Yeah.
And so they got the idea of, like, let's take the damaged fruit. Because they're in Wenatchee, Washington. Which is close to where you live.
It is, yeah.
And people, like you say, ah, it's Washington State. And it's like, oh, yeah, in the rainforest. So when you're in Wenatchee, does it look like a rainforest to you?
It is dry and sunny in the summer and cold and winter in the winter, and it's not a rainforest.
It is a desert.
It is
super deserty. It's like the sagebrush is dying.
It's only suitable for farming because of the rivers.
Yeah, got a big ass river they pump water out of and they put onto their fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, it is a desert, 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 desert. It's not a rainforest. But from Wenatchee to Seattle, I'm going to guess is 3 hours.
At least, yeah.
At least, okay. Yeah. But what this couple did is they're like, okay, let's take the damaged fruit, we'll put it into like 200 of these fruit boxes,
mm-hmm.
and we'll just drive them in the truck to Seattle and go to those farmers markets and sell them cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So at the commodity market, they would get 20 cents a pound, but at the farmers market, they sold them all for like 50 cents a pound, because people were like, boy, that's a lot of apples. Because, you know, the other apples that they buy are going to be like, you know, $2 or $3 a pound,
yeah,
right? So they're like, people are like, oh, yeah, I get a whole box for $10? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, so then they got home and they're like, we're going to make it. In fact, I think we have enough to pay off the mortgage now. And then on top of that, you know, we haven't even harvested all the crop. We left all the crop that didn't have hail damage. So they actually were able to buy more acres. But then it's like, okay, later they came up with an even better idea. And they got this subscribe to the Apple of the Month thing. So they did that. They subscribed to the Apple of the Month. People paid them like $3 a pound to get 12 apples every month. And then each of the varieties in there has a little story. And it's like, what a great way to get 12 apples,
that's
right?
Awesome.
So this was their new business, and they're doing really good.
So cool.
So, all right, the thing is that we start with commodity market stuff, and then we moved into this, where let's say that before they were making $4 an hour. And then when they started doing the thing with selling the apples in Seattle, then next thing you know, they're getting, I'm going to say, $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, wow, so much better. And now they've got their subscription apple business, and now let's say they're getting $20 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I want to, the last story in the Broken Limbs, I think, is great, and it goes like this. It's and this is all from memory. I didn't write any of this down, and I'm just winging it here. Okay. So then, and this is my favorite. There's this guy, and he, I believe, if I remember correctly, he has 3 apple trees.
That's
it's a permaculture thing.
Uh-huh.
He's got 3 apple trees, and and then, of course, they each come on at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And then so, and they're huge apple trees. So then he fills up like probably 40 boxes or 50 boxes, and he puts them in his pickup, and he drives into the town where there's a little organic grocery store. And the gal comes out, and she says, oh, I'm so sorry, we're not going to be able to pay the price that we paid last year.
Mm.
And this next line is so beautiful.
Well, that's all right. I'll just take them on home and feed them to the hogs.
We'll pay the same as last year.
Oh, all right.
Oh, this is beautiful. 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 So now, I mean, this guy, he's not caring for the trees in any way.
Right.
It's permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just grabbing the apples and sticking them in boxes and then taking them to town on his way to town to probably do other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then, I don't know, for this amount of time that he's got in here, is this dude making like $200 an hour?
Maybe.
And so, all right, so I don't know if Mark Shepard's making $200 an hour. I kind of doubt it. But wait, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
So like, all right, so when we're talking about selling apples, really what we're kind of talking about is dollars per hour. If you're going to sell apples,
yeah,
you're going to sell them. And it's kind of like, all right, that's cool. So let's move on a little bit. I got contacted by a guy. If I said his name, you would recognize his name.
Okay.
And he is a permaculture consultant, among other flavors of consultancy. He is a famous guy. He's a rather famous guy. And there is a property that he is on his way there. And I'm like talking to him in my car. I'm driving somewhere, so I've got him on speakerphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, everybody. I'm yelling at him. You fucking idiot! Are you how fucking stupid? But hey, you know what? You don't call me to get the support. You know, you don't call me like, oh, you're so good at this. They were smart hiring you. That's what you call a friend for. You're gonna do great. You're so good. And it's like, but if you doubt your plan, and if you think you need to hear a different opinion, you will foolishly call me. All right. So there's this property which had been overfarmed, and so basically they would grow things on it. And then they'd cut those things off and haul them away. Mm-hmm. So basically, how nature works is it leaves that stuff there.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, don't grow a monocrop. Duh. But, okay, if you cut it all off and haul it away, you're kind of hauling away the organic matter. Because what nature wants to do is grow a bunch of stuff and drop it back down on the ground, and that'll feed the soil microorganisms, and the soil will get soilier and soilier. Well, on this particular property, they'd been farming it for so long that it's like cement left behind.
Yeah.
It's just horrible.
Yeah.
It's, oh, ugh. And nothing will grow.
Mm-hmm.
Not even weeds.
Mm.
So,
wow.
So he's coming in and he's gonna, and it's like 200 acres.
Mm. Cool.
And so he told me his plan, and I was so angry.
Oh.
And he's like, I want to tell him to grow alfalfa.
Mm.
And then we'll bale it and sell
it. Bale it and take it away like they've been doing all this time?
To feed horses and stuff in the area. But yeah, that's what I said. So your advice...
is to keep farming.
Is as a permaculture person, grow a monocrop. And the problem you had in the past was people cutting the monocrops off and hauling it away. But your advice is to cut the monocrop off and haul it away. That's... Now, granted, now... It's a nitrogen fixing crop with a deep taproot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it's, for a plant, it's a good healing plant.
You know,
but you're still farming. Yeah.
So, I said, tell me about the property. There's a house, right? There's a house. He's like, okay, yeah, it's a big house. Okay, mm-hmm. You mean big like 4-bedroom or big like 20-bedroom? And he says, it's like 12 bedrooms.
Sweet.
And I said, okay. And it's a guy, a gal, a family. What's it's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and then he said, he's like a famous yogi guy.
Oh.
And it's like people all over the world want to hear what he has to say about yogi stuff.
Cool.
Yogas and whatnot. And so, and I said, okay. Is he famous? Is he so famous that people would pay money to, like, hang out in his house with him? Like, rent one of those rooms for a week or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
I said, here's my design as I'm driving down the road yelling at you about your stupid design. Take a quarter of an acre next to the house and build a whole lot of hookah culture and grow a lot of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to water it like crazy for a while because you got to rebuild the soil because you got dirt and you need soil. And each year you're going to do this to another quarter of an acre while at the same time continuing to build the soil in the last one, but eventually, after about 3 or 4 years, your first quarter of an acre won't need to be irrigated anymore.
It'll live on its own.
And the soil will be really rich.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be all this permaculture food pumping out of it.
Yeah.
And so, and time, then people will come and you can say, have all of this food that you want. We got more than we can possibly eat, you know, knock yourself out. And you might even be a cook or something someday, or maybe a cook on and off, or, you know, this week we have a cook or something. I don't know. But the thing is don't sell food.
Mm-hmm.
The government has some strong feelings about selling food. And so, there's no commodity market.
Right.
There's no subscription. There's no going to your local organic store and having them say, oh, we can't pay you as much as before. You know, none of that.
Right.
It's just a giant food pump just right out the back door.
Yeah.
And it's getting bigger every year as you add another quarter of an acre, another quarter of an acre, another quarter of an acre. And so here is this business plan for this guy, is that eventually enough people come by, not only for the yogas, but the foods. And then maybe you have somebody who's kind of like a house manager or something that gets paid really well. But now your income might be, instead of something like a couple $1,000 a month, or $3,000 a month, or $4,000 a month, maybe it's closer to $20,000 or $30,000 a month that you're making with, you know, the people here, and food is a major component of this.
This podcast is continued in part two.
Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Have you seen the new video of Wheatland Labs? It is permaculture awesomeness with all new and improved things like more rocket mass heaters, easy bake coffin, Willy Wonka, rocket cooktop 2.0, and the truly passive greenhouse. To see more, go to permies.com/tour. Again, that is permies.com/tour.